Hello there, Heather here. Before we begin this week's podcast, we have a disclaimer. Our topic this week is films shot in Tucson, Arizona. Among the films we chose is Westworld from 1973. Despite it being listed on IMDb's website as being shot in old Tucson studios, we found out after recording the podcast that in fact it was not. We have learned a valuable lesson and have added a new rule to the many rules of Film Club. Never trust information from the internet without confirming from another source. With that, I leave you to enjoy the podcast. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Film Club. My name is Jeff Yance. I'm the program director at The Loft Cinema, and we've also got with us occasional filmmaker Heather Lattis.
Hi, Jeff.
And multimedia artist Rusty Boulay-Stevenson.
I'm from Tucson.
Yes, we're all here in Tucson, and we're proud of it. And that's our topic of discussion today is films shot in Tucson.
Tucson, Arizona.
August is Tucson's birthday month, so that led to this idea to celebrate some of the film shot in Tucson, the great history of film shot in Tucson. There are still great films being made in Tucson, so we're going to look at the whole smorgasbord of Tucson, Arizona filmmaking. So just to start off with, I think we should probably point out that Tucson's legacy as a film location is the Western. Heather has revealed in previous podcasts that she's not fond of the Western genre.
But I honor the legacy that's here. I will honor the legacy, yeah. Even though the Westerns are not my favorite.
Yeah. And many, many great Western shot here and TV shows, features, TV shows. I think probably the heyday was the 40s through the 60s.
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. I think it's not overstating the case to say that Tucson was really the Hollywood of the Southwest at that point.
And for Western films.
Western films. Everybody shot films here. All the big stars were here. All the famous filmmakers were close geographically to LA.
But we also have old Tucson studios, which is why they were shot here. We have saguaro cactus. We have prickly pear cactus and mountain ranges. So it looks like the old West. And old Tucson is now an attraction that you can come to Tucson and visit, and you can see where they shot these Westerns. They still make movies. They still make music videos there. But that's the primary reason that people came to Tucson and still do come to Tucson to shoot movies is we have a studio for old West movies.
A working studio, yeah. Back in the day, there would be multiple productions going on at old Tucson, just like a real studio. And it was kind of a point of pride and excitement, I think, for Tucsonans to say, yes, we've got old Tucson studios here. And it's still great that it's here. It's just it's a different era of filmmaking, for sure. The Westerns have gone by the wayside. And
well, Rio Bravo was shot here.
Rio Bravo.
I just watched 310 to Yuma, the original. That was shot here. That's a great film.
That is a decent. I like that
one.
We found one.
Yeah. And some more recent, like Three Amigos, some more recent films.
One of my childhood favorites.
Three Amigos.
And people love Tombstone.
Tombstone.
So many stories. A lot of my friends were extras in that movie. It was a big thing for Tucson when they shot Tombstone.
And I'll point to The Villain as well, a film with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Really bad movie. It's kind of a Wile E. Coyote sort of movie, Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner movie. It's goofy. It's good for kids. My son and I watched it. That was filmed out there as well.
And that was Schwarzenegger and Anne Margaret. Is that right?
Schwarzenegger and Anne Margaret.
I've seen that, yes.
And Kirk Douglas. Wow. Yeah, no, it's quite a cast. It's really bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
Well, and I totally just rang a bell. The Postman, you know, was shot at our Sarco mine. And I was right before I used to work there. My dad worked there for 32 years. But it was a big deal. They were on one of I can't remember what it's called, but there was a guy there painting the dirt because he was making the dirt all cracked and apocalyptic. Yeah. So, I mean, we've had lots of that kind of thing in Tucson.
Sure. And so another reason people did, you mentioned it just briefly, was that we're close to L.A.
Yes.
And so it's really easy. When George Clooney filmed Three Kings, part of that was filmed in Tucson and part in Casa Grande. Or Casa Grande, depending on who you are.
Right.
But part of that was filmed here around here. And part of the reason was he was still working on ER. There are all kinds of flights from Tucson or from Phoenix to LA all day long. And so it was really easy for him to get back to Los Angeles and continue his work on a TV show.
Right. Yeah.
Which is another big reason why people shoot here.
Yeah, and that, and of course, the beautiful weather. We have sunshine most of the time, so you don't have to worry. Unless you shoot here in the summer, it's boiling and it rains. But aside from that, great. And we also have different regions. You can have a lot of different geographical looks in the Tucson
Absolutely.
Area.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Our mountain ranges, and we'll talk about this with your film, Jeff, but our mountain ranges are very distinct. Yes. The Tucson Mountains to the west of Tucson look like Old West mountains. They're jagged and they've got cactus all over them.
Yes.
To the north of us is the Santa Catalina Mountains. Well, by the time you get up to 8,500 feet, you've got pine trees and it looks mm-hmm. entirely different. And then the Rincons to the east, the Rincon Mountains, they've got this dome-like quality to them. And so everything looks very different. All these mountain ranges look different. So you can make it look not only just with the forest compared to the cactus, but just the mountain ranges alone, you can make it look like a bunch of different places.
Right. Yeah.
And that's very appealing if you're on a smaller budget and trying to make it look like yeah. three towns maybe.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and we'll talk about this with your film, yeah. Jeff, but when downtown Tucson had more grit, it was a great place to also shoot. So
yes, well, maybe let's talk about that film. We've all alluded to it, and it's great. Probably one of, if not my favorite movie shot in Tucson, I think. Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore from 1974, directed by the great Martin Scorsese. And this, I think, is a great movie that displays Tucson as a non-Western town. It was a contemporary modern story circa 1974. Martin Scorsese brought this really kind of crazy, great Scorsese energy to this story of a single mother and her son taking a road trip after her husband dies. They're trying to get to Monterey, California so that she can fulfill her dream of being a singer. And as happens to people, you know, she gets stuck in Tucson. She breaks down.
Oh,
she gets stuck in Tucson. That's why a lot of people can relate to
That's
it.
That's true.
So she gets stuck here. She becomes a waitress. And then, you know, but it's really an amazing film, an amazing portrayal of a single woman, I think, and a single mother. Not what you would expect from Scorsese. He doesn't typically focus on women in his films. I think this is maybe his only female-focused film.
The only one I can think of offhand.
Yeah. And it's a great film of its era because it's kind of about the burgeoning women's movement and
yeah.
it's kind of enlightenment. The Ellen Burstyn character realizes that she can make it on her own. Her husband dies, but she's going to start a new life for her and her son. And I think filming in Tucson was a really smart idea because of the kind of vast desert environment here. Really, there's a whole history of westward expansion, and there, you know, you move west because there's opportunities in the west, which she does.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And this kind of vast desert landscape sort of mirrors this sort of emptiness she feels inside, I think, and she's trying to, you know, make a better life for herself and her son.
Well, and though her husband dies, she's not necessarily happily married at all.
No.
The husband comes off as unlikable, as mean,
as a pig.
Yeah, a bit of a pig, not very thoughtful,
right.
A bit violent.
Violent, yeah. Right. And so even the son just doesn't seem that unhappy. And he points out to Ellen Burstyn's character that, gosh, Mom, you don't seem unhappy that Dad's dead.
Right?
I don't mean to make that a joke.
Yeah.
That sounds funny, but...
Yeah, but she's not.
But she's not unhappy about it. And you can see why. As an audience, you understand why she wasn't that unhappy.
Right. But she's a very timid character at the beginning, and she needs that impetus to get out of that marriage. She would not have done it on her own, I think.
No. No, and at the time, most women weren't leaving bad relationships and bad marriages.
Right.
Right, and that's alluded to constantly in the film. She goes to Phoenix first, and she starts dating Harvey Keitel's character. And again, it's just like a repeat again, you know, of this really lousy man, honestly,
right.
who's not being honest with her and who she has to get out of that relationship, too.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's such a great performance by Ellen Burstyn, who's just an amazing actress, of course, and she won the Oscar for Best Actress for this film. But her character is not a saint. I mean, typically at that point when you saw mothers portrayed in films, they were very saintly. They sacrificed for the children. She's not necessarily the greatest parent. She makes a lot of bad choices, both in men and for her son and in their housing situation. But that makes her a human being.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it brings that realism.
Yeah, but her relationship with her son is great. They kind of fight, but they're also kind of pals. They're friends.
I love that relationship in this movie. It's so sweet.
He's a total wiseacre, and she gives it back to him, you know. And
yeah.
It's almost like this kind of witty sparring relationship they have.
Yeah.
And in the absence of a father, he kind of becomes sort of her male companion, which is interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved it. I loved their relationship. The boy, that was the one thing that could get my son laughing at this movie. It's rated PG, so I had my 7-year-old watch it with me.
Yeah.
But he loved the scenes with the mom and the son, the water fight that they have. It just feels so real. This film, compared to so many movies that came before this, we looked at the Sight and Sound list, most of those films didn't seem real.
Right.
This feels like a real relationship. Like you're getting a sneak peek, an inside view of how these relationships are unfolding. It almost doesn't feel like a movie. It's
almost documentary-like.
It's almost documentary-like. Yeah.
And as we talked about off mic, I really related to this film as a kid because I saw it as a kid and I was from a single parent family. My mother raised my sister and I for the most part. And it felt really authentic, and I think that's why it holds up today. Even though it's, from a modern perspective, a lot of people have claimed it's anti-feminist because she needs a man in her life, or she wants a man in her life. But I don't really see it that way. I feel like that's a very feminist statement, that she has the option to have a man if she wants.
Yeah. And, the end of that movie makes you think that if something still goes bad, she's willing to drop him and keep on going.
Yes.
And that's why, to me, I think it's definitely a feminist kind of thing. I wouldn't say anti at all. Mm.
She gets him to publicly say that he's going to change his behavior. He does it in front of a whole audience.
Yes.
That things cannot be the same. I understand that if you're going to take me back, things can't be the same.
Right.
I really saw it as a feminist film. I see it as her as a really strong character, especially for the time. It's really kind of profound what a great film it is. And did you say, Jeff, that she was a producer on this film, Ellen Burstyn?
So she was an uncredited producer. So she got the project going, and she actually was the one who got Scorsese hired to make the film. Apparently, Warner Brothers offered it to her as a director, and she said she didn't feel confident. She hadn't really done that before, but she wanted a young, exciting new filmmaker, and Martin Scorsese, this was his first studio film. He had done Mean Streets before this as an indie film, and she thought it was really exciting. She thought he'll bring a lot of fresh energy to this, and bringing a male perspective, which was interesting, but there were a lot of other females working on the film in other key positions. But having his kind of male energy, and she apparently asked him, what do you know about women? He said, nothing, but I'm willing and want to learn.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, which she thought was great. She said, yes, let's do this.
Yeah.
And just since we're talking about film shot in our hometown of Tucson, just like to talk about the locations just briefly, and Alice doesn't live here anymore. This is a great postcard of Tucson in the 70s that doesn't really exist anymore. These are locations you don't see anymore.
Agreed.
Heather, you mentioned the downtown, the gritty downtown.
Yes. The old school Chicago store.
Old school Chicago music store, which is not with us now.
No. It moved.
It's just different.
I mean, the building looks nice, but it's not like it was.
But when Jodie Foster goes in there and steals those guitar picks, and they're in the alley behind the store, it's amazing. It makes you remember a lot of things about Tucson that have been sort of smoothed out, some of the rough edges.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, and Scorsese brilliantly uses Tucson to be New Mexico, Phoenix, and Tucson. And he does it in a lot of different ways, but one way he does it, and a road trip. He does a road trip, and it's all shot around Tucson as well, but it doesn't look like it. And it's because he uses our mountain ranges so well. Mm-hmm. He uses the different parts of the city so well that you never feel like it's, even as somebody who lives here, it feels like it's different places. Except for a few shots that totally remind me, oh yes, that's Sixth Avenue. That's even right. though we're saying this is New Mexico, that is obviously Sixth Avenue.
Yes,
there.
There's the Monterey Village Shopping Center. We know it on Speedway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jodie Foster has the great line in the film, oh, Tucson is the weird capital of the world.
I love that line. Great.
And I think this movie captures that weirdness of Tucson, which I think was kind of specific to that era.
Yeah, definitely. When I think, you know, going back to Ellen Burstyn as such a, I think if you get anything from this, go watch more Ellen Burstyn movies.
Just do it.
She's amazing. One of the best actors that ever existed. She's been underrated and not enough people use her as an older actress now, but she's amazing. And I highly recommend any of her movies.
Yeah. And I'm shocking she was even considered an older actress then. She didn't.
Like, so crazy.
She didn't hit until she was in her early 40s. Like she had been struggling for years. Hmm. And this was kind of her big break. She's amazing. I'm totally with you on that. So now we're kind of moving chronologically, I think. So our next film that Heather selected is sort of a Western-ish.
Yes.
From the one who doesn't like Westerns.
I know. So it's not really weird because I love sci-fi. So I picked Westworld, 1973, directed by Michael Crichton, stars James Brolin, Richard Benjamin, and the amazing Yul Brynner.
Yeah.
And as a child, Jeff and I have discussed this. I mean, I had many a nightmare about Yul Brynner as the psycho robot who fights back against the humans. It would just stayed in my brain, and I hadn't seen this movie in probably 20 years at least, but that was my memory, was scary Yul Brynner. And it wasn't, so I rewatched it recently, and it was like, oh, there's all these other layers to it that I didn't notice as a kid. Yeah. But basically, it starts off as an ad, and the company is Delos, and they are offering this theme park, essentially, where you can go and be in Western world, medieval world, or Roman world. And it basically tells you, you can do whatever you want. the end of the tagline for the company is, you know, come to Delos, nothing can go wrong.
Oh,
and so it's, you know, the ad alludes to, you can go and kill anyone you want. You can go and sleep with anyone you want. You can marry anyone you want. It's all up into your imagination. And the, you know, James Brolin and Richard Benjamin go into Westworld, and that's their cowboys. Yul Brynner plays one of the robots who's a bad guy, and he's there to kind of stir up trouble. And, you know, normally he would help. You know, you're going, these regular, very well-to-do people are going to pay $1,000 a day to be in their chosen world. It's kind of an elitist thing. And slowly over time, you know, they get in bar fights, they get in shootouts and things like that. But slowly the robots turn bad.
Yes.
And it's, you know, they don't really tell you why they're turning bad. It could be that it's just bad programming, or they're becoming sentient beings. They kind of say like it's a robot virus, something like that. And everything goes wrong. You know, the robots fight back. They actually are, you know, they're supposed to not kill humans, but they end up killing humans. You know, things like that. And, you know, the things that stood out to me that I didn't see as a kid was that there's barely any women in this movie that have any speaking roles unless they're a robot prostitute. Yeah. Back then it didn't strike me. Now, and the whole movie I was watching, I was like, what? Can you give me one woman that
that's, nope.
You know, no, you mm-mm. can't. Mm-mm. And also I just feel like as a kid, this was like the first movie what I realized sci-fi was without really knowing it, without labeling it, and how cool it was and how there was robots and there was, you know, in their back room where they control the robots, it's so technical. There's so many buttons and that light up, and there's all these fake computer programs. I love that part. And the Western town, you know, as we were talking, is shot in old Tucson. So, you know, it looks like an old Tucson. So it's kind of like a theme within a theme. They're in a theme park, going to a theme park to shoot, you know, that movie that's about pretending. So it's, you know, kind of that kind of a little meta, but not overly so.
Yeah. And it's also meta because it's a comment on the Western genre, I think.
Yes.
This idea that when we watch Western movies, we think people can be shot and it's no big deal and you can murder many, many people and it's fine.
Yeah.
And that's what they're being encouraged to do in Westworld, mm-hmm. these visitors to Westworld.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a clever satire, I think, of the genre even.
Yeah, basically go get start a gunfight and go to the brothel. That's the two things that you're doing in Westworld.
And there are no repercussions to any of that.
Mm-mm.
No.
No. And so we were talking about that off mic before, and I think, you know, this is kind of a precursor to, you know, RoboCop. Michael Crichton wrote Jurassic Park, the other failed theme park idea.
Yes.
You know, so I think to some degree, Westworld kind of laid that a little bit of groundwork, and the idea of a bad, evil corporation creating this thing that, you know, thinking they can control technology and give humans everything they want, and it all goes bad, is kind of a theme that then follows into the 80s and stuff like that.
Because that was a very 70s theme, the whole dystopian.
Yeah.
Like, all the sci-fi in the 70s was very dystopian.
Yeah.
Like, technology is bad, and it's going to destroy us. And, Michael Crichton has always kind of been on that tip, which is kind of interesting, him being an actual scientist who became a filmmaker and... but he seems very skeptical of the power of science to harm us, you know.
Yeah.
Should point out, too, that it was very influential. I mean, the Simpsons episode Itchy and Scratchy Land is almost a direct parody of Westworld.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing I forgot is that Yul Brynner's walk, like you were saying, yes, he walks like he walked in Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
But it's so not cowboy-like.
Because
he's a robot. And it freaks me out. And I thought, as soon as I saw him walking, it made me think of Terminator 2, of the I can't remember his name, but the silver robot.
Oh, the Robert Patrick.
The liquid robot.
Yes.
Yeah, Robert Patrick. His walk is very similar to that, robotic-like and very goal-oriented. He's not stopping. He's going after
his
goals.
Yeah.
So a lot of that was kind of got me thinking about Terminator. It's just we talked about The Purge, how it's this ideal wealthy people, the comparison of wealthy people being able to go do what they want, very much like The Purge movies that have been out lately.
Yeah, it's very influential. Yeah. And I think, I literally think Yul Brynner as the gunslinger in Westworld is one of the most frightening images of a movie from that era.
Mm-hmm.
The image of his faceplate swinging open with circuits on his face, mm-hmm. and he's got the black suit and the cowboy hat, the glowing eyes.
Yeah, and at one point they say, oh, we're going to increase his visual and audio capacity so he can hear you. So one of the guys is trying to hide, but he can hear his magnified hearing.
No.
He can hear him breathe. It is so creepy.
You can't escape
and
Yul
so,
Brynner.
Yeah, you can't escape him. So, Yul Brynner turned in from me, like, I loved him from The King and I thought he was so handsome and regal. And then I saw him in Westworld, and it totally tarnished that memory for me. But... anyways, Westworld is, I think, groundbreaking in of its own cheesy way.
Right.
And just on a technical note, I have to get a little techie and say that Westworld was the first movie to use digital image processing, which I thought was really cool. So they shot some film, ingested it into a computer back in the day, and shot it back out. And that's the image you get whenever you see the robot's point of view.
Oh,
and it's the pixelated image. And you think nowadays that can be done on, I can do that on my computer at home.
Right.
But back then it was, it took tons of processing. And it was one of the first, and it doesn't really surprise me, it's Michael Crichton, kind of wanting to push the edge and get some technical and science involved. So,
well, and I think too that cheesiness of the 60s and 70s, that was almost Tucson's bread and butter a little bit as far as films go. You had Westworld, but certainly also I watched Miniskirt Mob, which is a really bad movie from 1968, but it's really great for Tucson locations. It shows Agua Caliente Park and it shows Catalina Highway, and it's really kind of pretty.
For being about a female biker gang in Tucson.
Yeah.
which is pretty good.
I need to see
Death Wish was filmed here in the 70s.
Oh, I forgot about Death Wish.
Most of it. A lot of it, not the whole movie, but
the atrocious atrocious Cannonball Run. Part of was filmed
that
here.
As a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, go watch it now, Heather. It's terrible. I loved it too. I loved Cannonball Run too as a kid. I loved both of them.
Ouch.
They are bad.
Yeah. Okay.
They are bad. You can go.
Yeah,
I went back. I made it through half of the first Cannonball Run before I just gave up and was like, I can't believe this made a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Burt Reynolds at the time made $5 million. That was a record for an actor at the time.
And he earned that paycheck big time. No. Not at all.
He slept walked through everything I saw. It was, oh my gosh.
But since we're diving into the cheese, I did just wanted to mention, aside from Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, I think one of my favorite movies shot in Tucson in terms of the Tucson-ness of the film is The Wraith, which is an 80s film. Love The Wraith. Starring Charlie Sheen as a ghost race car driver, Avenger.
Is it Sherilyn Fenn?
Sherilyn Fenn from Twin Peaks is in it.
Ron Howard's brother. Always
Clint Howard is in it.
Guy.
Yes. Nick Cassavetes, John Cassavetes' son, is in it.
Oh, wow.
It's total, complete, and utter cheese fest, but
it's fun.
It's really fun. It's got some of the best location shooting in a Tucson movie that I have seen. It's all over the city. It's downtown. It's Sabino Canyon area. It's Gates Pass area. And it's a ghost race car driver Avenger horror sci-fi comedy teen romance film.
What's not to like about that?
With Charlie Sheen, who made at least four films here, which I think is bizarre. Mm.
Major League,
Terminal Velocity, The Arrival.
Wow.
The Wraith.
Mm.
So at least four.
The Getaway's partially shot here, like a little bit of it.
The Getaway, exactly, yeah. So for some reason, we were an attractive city for Charlie Sheen, which whatever that says about Tucson, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I can't come up with his name right now, but the guy who directed Cannonball Run also directed the villain.
Hal Needham.
Yeah. And so he obviously seemed to like Tucson as well.
Yeah.
And used it, you know, I mean, old Tucson he used very well in the villain. It's not a very good movie. You know what you could do with the villain is you can watch the credits. And when you watch the credits of the villain, it shows you all the great scenes from the movie again, just so that you don't forget that
there were some.
Yeah, it's got like a greatest hits reel for the credits so that you do remember, oh, there were some moments where I laughed.
I guess.
Replays them all. But so I could talk about mine now because my film is from 2009. It's called Ingenious, and it uses Tucson locations beautifully. It's a great little indie film about an inventor and his kind of hacky salesperson who's trying to help him sell his inventions. He's got watches that he's selling, these really cheesy novelty watches with dogs and lottery numbers that he's trying to sell and trying to get people to buy. And it just shows Tucson. It's just steeped in Tucson. It's interesting because it's based on a true story of a real inventor, but he never lived in Tucson. He came to Tucson. He went to the Tucson film office, and Peter there at the film office helped him out. But he was very set on using Tucson as the staging for this film, and it really feels, if you live in Tucson, this is a movie you should definitely see because everything about it just kind of oozes Tucson. It's so great. You get scenes from the dog track, you get scenes from the casinos. There's a house that they live in, and if you live in Tucson, you know this house. It's the typical 1970s house that we've all spent time in when we were in our 20s staying up late. And then it's just a really great little indie film. The female character in it is really well thought out and drawn to be a three-dimensional person, not somebody who just follows the whims of the man in the movie. It's just a really great film, and I don't want to give away. He ends up making something. He's trying to make something so that he becomes a millionaire. The guy became a millionaire. He came here, shot the movie. He wrote this movie. Mm-hmm. He's a very wealthy man now because of this invention that he came up with, not a novelty watch.
Right.
But it's really just a fun film. Hal Gelb's music is featured in it.
Right.
You can see Hal Gelb in that movie. I didn't notice too many of my friends in it, but I hear people say who've seen this movie that their friends are in it all over the place.
Yeah.
So I recommend this without any qualifications. It's an easy movie for me to watch. I could watch it again in a heartbeat and be very entertained. And it just shows Tucson, even the relationship feels like a Tucson kind of dysfunctional relationship, the same kind of issues somebody would have in Tucson. They're all drinking Tecate beers, just everything about it. You see the little houses in Tucson that we've all partied in, and then you see these great big huge house of somebody super successful that you see around the foothills. You see those homes, just everything about Tucson. It's all in this movie, and so it was really easy for me to watch and to recommend here.
Yeah,
Ingenious is what it's called,
and Jeremy Renner is in it.
That's right.
Yeah, and he was not really a big star when they made the film, but then when they were trying to release the film, he became somewhat of a big star. And
yeah.
So they kind of changed the title and
they repackaged it.
Remarketed it a little bit, yeah.
Originally, it was called Lightbulb. I didn't know it then at all. Mm. And now it's called Ingenious, Ingenious. And you can find it on Netflix. It's well worth your watch. It's well worth your time. It's a very fun film.
Yeah.
Very fun and really thoughtful. Moves away from that cheesiness of the 70s for sure. This is something that's a really thoughtful film that's really fun to watch.
Well, I totally agree. I really like that film also. And as we're kind of like winding it down, you just mentioned something, Rusty, that I thought was interesting about people you know, friends of yours who were in that film. And Tucson is a big city, but it feels like a small city in a lot of ways in that people get really excited when a movie shoots here. And you always know someone who was in a film that was shot here, which is great. I myself, as a young child, was in Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, I didn't know.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Which shot here at the U of A at the Spring Fling Carnival. I got into a scene. I can see myself in the film, which is pretty exciting, during the big concert scene at the end.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Yeah. And have either of you been in any Tucson films?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
No, I have not been in a Tucson film. I snuck onto a set that was, I'd have to think. I can't tell you what the name of the movie is right now, but my friend and I snuck onto a set. I had never been on a movie set, and they were shooting on 4th Avenue overnight. So after work, my friend and I went and pretended to be real extras there.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, my friend rubbed shoulders with Rosie Perez.
Oh, nice.
Oh.
Yeah, actually brushed up against her, even though we were not supposed to be around there.
And, oh, wow.
And I think the people who were making the movie, who were in charge of the extras, kind of recognized by that point that we weren't their normal extras. But that's what we did.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. And, you know, I think, too, I want to talk about real quickly is that it used to be that movies were made here a lot. Can't Buy Me Love was made here and features a lot of Tucson.
Yes.
Like we talked about, Old Tucson featured, I don't know how many movies, over 100 movies were made out there, right?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of films were made out in Old Tucson. Movies aren't made in Tucson or Arizona very much anymore. And I know this, I work at Visit Tucson, and the Tucson Film Office is in Visit Tucson. It's part of it. And so I talked to Peter Catalanati there at the film office, and they lobby our state government because right now the way people are getting movie and TV productions made is they offer subsidies to these films that are being made. So they'll give you money back. You spend millions of dollars in their town, they'll give you a couple million back. Our state will not do that. They want no part of subsidies for films or for subsidies for art. We give subsidies to a lot of other things, and I won't get into the politics of that.
Right.
But subsidies for art are not something that are a priority for the Arizona legislature. In fact, the Tucson Film Office was told when they last were trying to lobby for subsidies, they were told that there is legislative fatigue on the matter.
Oh.
So our legislators don't even want to hear about it anymore.
Right.
Meanwhile, Breaking Bad is filmed in New Mexico. Walking Dead is filmed in Georgia. And it's turned it into a tourism industry for these places. People are going to see where Breaking Bad was made. People are going to see where Walking Dead was made. And it's making a ton of money for these people. But our legislature and our governor do not see that as something that they want to be part of.
And I've heard that Breaking Bad originally was looking at Tucson as the location for that show, which would have been a huge boom for Tucson.
Oh, gosh. And yeah. It totally would have fit here, yeah. Right? And but honestly, if you're spending millions of dollars to make a movie and you see Arizona or New Mexico, it's really easy to have desert scenes in New Mexico instead.
Yeah.
If they're going to give you millions of dollars back.
Right. And I love it when a film is set in Tucson but shot in New Mexico. like the film Hamlet 2, if yeah, you remember absolutely. That, was actually set here.
Oh, filmed. Really?
I think it was actually filmed in Albuquerque.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Which is so unfortunate.
It's so unfortunate.
Yeah, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to hear because there's so much... When we have meetings for Visit Tucson, we have the hotels. People from the hotels come and see what we're doing, trying to drum up business for Tucson. And they're like, wait a minute, they don't want films to be made here in Arizona? Why is that? Like, that's bad for us. We as hoteliers want these films to be made here. We want people staying in our hotels and resorts.
Oh, yeah. It's good for all areas of the economy.
Yes.
It doesn't make sense.
No, it really doesn't. It's really frustrating, especially because it's not like they're saying no subsidies.
Right.
They're just saying no subsidies for arts.
Mm. They don't see the value in it.
They don't see the value right. in it. And I don't know, but I imagine that though they're just not friends with those people, with people who are making movies, that right. they're friends with people in other industries.
Right.
And so I think that that's a big part of it, honestly. I mean... when you look at how we are spending money in this mm-hmm. state, it's just frustrating as somebody who cares about film and who cares about art that we're not looking at the bigger picture of this matter. And we've lost that. We've lost films being made in Arizona in large part because of that, because it's yeah. financially more feasible to do it elsewhere. And so now we still have a lot going on. You see reality television shows filming here, mm-hmm. commercials, big time commercials film in Tucson all the time because right. of our mountain ranges.
Right.
So there is stuff still being made here, but it's just not the feature length films anymore.
Yeah. So I'm going to put out the call right now on this podcast to Martin Scorsese. It's time to come film another movie in Tucson, Marty. I think when a big director like that breaks the barrier and just does it, I think the legislators will see it's a viable thing.
I would hope so.
We just need yeah. someone to do it. So,
well, and Scorsese, in the commentary on Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, says he loved shooting and filming
yes,
in Tucson.
Yes. So I'm going to pitch it. Alice still doesn't live here anymore.
Yeah.
Marty. Part two.
Marty, I know you're listening to this. It's very important that he's a big fan of Film Club, I've heard.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. So we'll not hold our breath for that. But... So this was actually very interesting, and it's a great way to celebrate Tucson. I think, you know, rent a movie that's shot in Tucson, check it out, kind of support that
absolutely.
History of Tucson as a great film community.
Well, and I haven't lived here all my life. A lot of Tucsonans are transplants. I've lived here for the last 20 plus years, but in seeing Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, I love seeing that downtown.
Oh, yeah.
I love seeing that. So as just somebody who's interested in Tucson history, too, it's really fascinating to watch these movies
it
like Mini Skirt Mob.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so thank you, Heather and Rusty. That was great.
Great
Thanks,
fun.
Jeff.
Yeah. So next time on Film Club, we're going to be delving into the personal lives of the Film Club members, myself, Heather, and Rusty.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. And we're just going to be talking about our history with film and kind of what inspired us to be film obsessive folks that we are now.
That get together in a hot little room in the middle of the summer
yeah.
in Tucson and talk about movies.
Just chat obsessively about films. What drove us to this? We're going to find out next time on Film Club. So that brings us to rule number 38 of Film Club is never discount your childhood as being a harbinger of things to come in your adulthood.
True that.
Yep.
All right. So thanks for listening to Film Club, and we'll see you next time.